envision three female attorneys coming together to have our voices heard. Each of us would have different opinions, different passions, different backgrounds, and different views. Although we are different and unique, we are able to come together to discuss our experiences navigating through the legal profession and this thing called life. Now, the vision has come alive, and we invite you each and every week to listen to us as we talk about what's trending in the news and our legal insight. Tackle real life issues that affect not only us as attorneys, but us as women of color. Disclaimer. This podcast is intended to provide entertainment and general information. The information provided and the views given are not intended to constitute legal advice and should not be relied upon as legal representation. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever we are affiliated with now or will be affiliated with in the future.
Hey guys, it's your girl Brent. No, it's not. It's Taria. Unfortunately tonight, Brandy and Sam cannot be with us, so I brought in two lovely young men to come in and talk to us, no further questions, about a great topic. So to the left of me, I have Mr. Quinnen Brooker. Quinnen?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. And thank you for inviting me back, Taria. I really appreciate it.
I know. This is two times.
This is my second time on the show.
In 2019.
It. Yes, it is.
Perfect. Who are you? Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm Quinnen Brooker. I am a criminal defense attorney. That's my profession. But I'm also husband, dad, community person, coach football for the kids in the community. And I am an anti-racist. That's me.
We'll get into that a little bit later.
Hopefully.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
And to my right, I'm so humbled that he would grace us with his presence on tonight. Mr. Gary, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And what's up, all the subscribers here? My name is Gary Lee, also known as G Hawkins. Of course, you can reach me anywhere online at G Hawkins. That's G Hawkins with a Z. And I'm excited. I'm excited to finally touch down on this show because there's so much to be learned. And you all are, y'all have enveloped all this knowledge. And it feels wonderful to get that knowledge from people who look like me. That's important to me and in this society, especially today and right now.
Wonderful. Well, thank you guys so much for being with me today. So I wasn't by myself with two empty chairs on the left and the right of me. So what are we talking about tonight? DWB. I just learned this term.
You did?
I did.
That's new to you.
I had never heard it being called DWB. So I'll start off with DWB, which means driving while black. Mm-hmm. Is that actually a thing?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely a thing. When you take it from a personal experience like myself, I've been pulled over 3 times this year. I did violate traffic laws, but I got pulled over. And so my thought process was, you know, how is this going to go, was my thing. But empirically, when you look at the numbers, black people are pulled over more often than their our counterparts, white people. And once we're pulled over, we are usually given a harsher time. In other words, we are cited more frequently. And also, unfortunately, the encounter will end violently twice as often as it would for a white person. And so it is definitely a thing. And this is based on the empirical evidence, the studies that have been conducted up and through 2018. So DWB in America is definitely a thing. And it's something that we need to be concerned about as a people. We have to understand that it is a thing, that it does exist. And then we have to think about ways to counter it so that we can leave those types of encounters safely. Because at the end of the day, it's just about getting home safely. But it is certainly a thing.
Hmm. What do you think?
Driving while black? How about breathing while black? How about eating while? I mean, anything that we can do with this melanated skin seems to be egregious to someone else. And it's always a shame. I don't know if it's true that there's this threatened feel or if it's just the desire for us to be property again. I can't call it myself, but I do know that, one, it hampers your spirit. Because specifically while you're driving, you're always alert and aware that there could be a police officer somewhere. And that police officer is probably going to watch you more than anyone else on this road, regardless of what you do. And that can give you all types of psychological issues on a day-to-day basis. And I don't think anyone deserves to be stressed out from a 15-minute commute to a two-hour commute. I don't think that's healthy or necessary, but it's something, unfortunately, that we have to live with each and every day.
Hmm. So, you both kind of touched on something. Do y'all believe that if you have two vehicles, the speed limit's 60, they're both going 80 miles per hour, one vehicle holds a black person as the driver, the other one holds a white person as the driver, police officer sees both vehicles, do you believe that the black person is going to be pulled over 9 times out of 10 over the white person?
Depends on the tint. Depends on how deep this tint in. Depends on if there's a 100 sticker in the back window. I mean, I think there's so many different variables that may go. And this is me making an assumption, right? I'm not an officer. I do have friends, close friends, that are officers, that are sheriffs. But I would assume there are other variables in play. But at the end of the day, if there's anything that can elaborate to the idea that this driver is African American, whether it's the wheels on his vehicle, the type of car that he's driving, if there's any audio coming out that can be heard at this speed level, I think that car will be pulled over statistically more often than someone that does not fit, that vehicle doesn't even fit that description, let alone being able to see the individual.
There's no doubt that statistically we're going to be pulled over more. But I don't know if you saw the case that came out last week in New York. You have a, I don't know if he was the chief of police in New York or whatever, but he had an actual program where the officers were paid more, or in other words, were given more opportunity to make more money through overtime and things of that nature, if they had arrest of black men and of minority men. I mean, this is a specific program that's implemented by law enforcement to target black America in the city. So when you have things that occur that like that, it's clear that there's a problem. And I think for us, the first thing we need to do is understand that there is a problem and not fall into this fallacy that we live in a post-racial society, because you still today in 2019 have a police chief not only encouraging but mandating that officers go out and perform more stops, more frisks that are going to ultimately lead to more arrests of blacks over other people. And so when you have that type of thing going on, it's clear that we, again, still have a problem. So DWB, like Gary said, walking while black, it's all the other side of the privilege that our counterparts enjoy. They don't have to worry about being stopped because they're white. If they're doing 80 and they get pulled over, it's because they're doing 80. And they can pretty safely conclude that that's the only reason. For us, we always have that question as to whether, you know, am I being pulled over because I'm black, or is it because of a traffic violation? And what I think is more harmful is what's going to happen as a result of this stop. For me, I'm a licensed gun carrier in the state of Texas. And so we're obligated to let officers know that, hey, we have a firearm in the vehicle. We have to show them our license. And many times they'll ask you, you know, where's the gun located? Ironically, I struggled with this for a long time because, you know, we've seen the Philando Castile and all of that. So I've struggled with whether I should even enforce my Second Amendment right. But ultimately, it's interesting. As I was going through the training, the trainer told us, let that officer know, because if you have the license to carry, that means that you've gone through all the screenings, so they make them feel safer. So at the end of the day, you want to keep in the back of your mind that you want to leave the encounter safe, whatever that is going to require. And so I definitely make them aware that I'm carrying. I give them my license. So that they understand that I'm not a threat. I let them know where the firearm is located so they understand I'm not a threat. And we can start to remove all of these excuses, because an officer, if he merely says, I felt like I was in fear of my life, or he made a furtive gesture or a furtive move, then he'll blow you away.
Right.
And we've seen that more than likely they're not going to be convicted. And if they are convicted, they're going to get something on the lesser end of the punishment range as a black person would get. So, we just have to understand the situation. We got to understand that it is different for blacks as we try to live in this society, and that we have to be prepared to do whatever is necessary to essentially, unfortunately, make them feel safe in that situation. Because your encounter with law enforcement is probably one of the most dangerous times in your life. when you encounter law enforcement, when they pull you over, that is a dangerous situation to be in. And so we have to understand that. We don't have the privilege to, you know, fuss at the police officer and ask him, why are you pulling me over? Comply to a degree. And I always say, do what you think is necessary to feel safe. So at the end of the day, we need to be aware and we need to understand what's necessary to feel safe and to make that officer feel safe so we can go home.
So I have a couple questions.
Me too, because
are you a licensed
carrier? I'm not, and I want to dive into that.
I do too. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're right here, right here tonight. Mm-hmm. Because my father recently got his license to carry. Mm-hmm. And I was nervous as an attorney reading all the news and him being a black man. I asked why. You know, get your guns, you can hunt, store those in your house, but why do you need to carry one on your person, mm-hmm. knowing that these individuals are out here, to some extent it comes off as if they're looking for a reason to shoot us, mm-hmm. right? And so if one does choose to carry a gun and be licensed, what's your advice to them? So when you get pulled over, as soon as you roll down your window, are you saying, hey, officer, I'm licensed to carry?
So we're acknowledging that there's a problem, right?
That's the first
question. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
if we even have to ask this question, there's a problem.
Right. I believe there's a problem.
I just want to make sure that the empirical studies and our own personal experiences let us know that there's a problem. The training tells us to provide your information first. So you provide your driver's license, you provide your insurance, and you show them, because it's a physical license.
Right.
You give them the physical license, and if they ask, you know, do you have a firearm located in the vehicle? You tell them yes. And if they ask where it's located, you tell them where it's located. Now, they don't necessarily have a right to take your firearm unless they, quote unquote, feel unsafe for any reason. But I'm going to tell you, it's happened twice this year. One, I was driving out to San Antonio. I had to be there 8:30 in the morning to some small town past San Antonio. I got pulled over. I was flying. Got pulled over. And it was my first experience having to tender my license. So I was like, let's see how this is going to go. The officer was, from what I could tell, a Hispanic officer, but probably identified himself as white. So I tendered my license, and he said, okay, do you have a firearm? Where's it located? I said, it's in my bag right here. He said, okay. And that was it. He wrote me my ticket, and that was it. It happened in my own neighborhood just a few weeks ago. I'm right up the street from the house. Got pulled over for doing 35 and a 25 during school hours, because normally it's 40, but
right.
It was school hours, yeah. So I got pulled over. Same thing, gave him my stuff, and he was like, okay, where is it located? I told him where it was located. So if you follow the protocol that your trainer will teach you, I feel comfortable with that, but I also really believe that when you tell them that you're licensed, they understand that you're not a felon, okay? You're not a felon. At that point, they can take and put you in a different category because if you're a felon, you can't get that license.
Interesting.
So off top, you know I'm not inherently a threat to you, okay? So I think that that's helpful. The issue comes when you start to notice nervousness on behalf of the police officer. You're obligated to tell them about the license anyway. But if you start to identify nervousness, have a conversation with them respectfully. Hey, officer, if you're nervous about me having a firearm, do you want me to step out of the vehicle? Whatever you got to do to ensure that you're making them feel safe and making yourself feel safe in the situation, that's what you got to do. Some people, in fact, the trainer talked about calling 911, which I thought was a novel idea. Call 911 as soon as you get pulled over. Hey, I just got pulled over. I'm right here on Mason Road, and I just wanted to let you know I got pulled over. It looks like a precinct for a constable. Keep them on the phone. We saw a case where a man had called 911. His vehicle was down. He called 911. The officer who came up on the scene was unaware that he had called 911, and he wound up killing the man. It was a black man. He wound up killing him. But because the call was on 911, it was recorded. And so they were able to later go back and prosecute the officer. So maybe if you feel like it's necessary, call 911. Keep them on the phone. You can tell them, hey, I feel unsafe. I'm going to keep you on the phone here as you know we go through this process. So there are things you could do that make sense that are not necessarily a threat to the officer. I find that usually you won't have to go that far, but I actually feel a lot safer carrying my firearm with me than I did without carrying my firearm. And I do think it's necessary. And I think that, you know, it's your dad's right to carry a firearm. See, a lot of times we have like this self-defeating kind of attitude, like we shouldn't do certain things because we're black and we need to be conscious and cognizant of the circumstances. But it doesn't mean that I should protect my family in a lesser way because I'm black. At the end of the day, I want to protect, you know, I'm going to have three daughters, my son, my wife, my mom. And to be quite honest with you, I can't do that as effectively without a firearm. I mean, I'll get out there and fight you. But at the end of the day, if you got a gun, I'm going to lose that battle. So I think it's a good thing. And this is something, again, that we struggled with for over a year. And then ultimately, I was like, you know, I think I need to do this. So actually, me and my mother-in-law went and got our licenses together. And it's cool. We got several guns in the house now. And again, I feel a lot safer.
That's interesting. And what made me want to question this concept is not the thing of, because I'm African-American, there's certain things I shouldn't do. But the idea that how much of a threat am I now to this officer because this officer knows I have a gun. And if I'm carrying a weapon and I feel threatened, then I feel like at that point it's my obligation to protect myself. Yeah. So does that heighten this situation? But I like the concept that I never even thought about, which is the fact that you cannot get this license without being and you are a felon, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're not a felon, you're golden, and this says something to the officer.
It does. It does.
And I think that in itself, that makes a lot of sense. So that logical piece gives me a breath of fresh air, so to speak, to say, you know what? You know, for all those that are listening to this right now on Stitcher or Podbean or wherever we're located, perhaps we should all have our permits, our you know, right to conceal and carry, because it speaks volumes in ways that we don't think about.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And really in Texas, there is a substantial training that you have to go through to have this license to carry. It's now called LTC, license to carry. It used to be a license to carry concealed, now it's just LTC. You have to go through hours of training. You have to go through the practical side of firing a weapon and all of that and be proficient.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to go through the law and kind of go through that. And, you know, the guy that we went to, it was interesting because when we went, there were like 50 cops there, right? And they actually did some of their handgun training, their monthly training or whatever. They did it there. So we walked in, and it felt like Redneck'sville. Like, it was like, oh, Lord, we're going to be here with these cops. But, I mean, the guy was – he was amazing. We went through the relevant portions of the law. And this was after we did the shooting. We did the shooting first, and then we went through the relevant portions of the law. And it was, I mean, this was half a day, in addition to, of course, you got to get your fingerprints and all of that.
Right.
So when you do it, you feel safer. And you don't just talk about guns. You talk about just safety. You know, do you have an emergency plan at your house if there's a fire? Do you have a rope ladder that you could throw out of the second story window? I mean, there are a lot of other things that we covered, but at the end of the day, it makes you think, and I think that's very important.
Yeah.
But no, at the end of the day, man, we got to understand as black people, we're at war. And I really don't think that we understand that we're at war, that we're attacked because of what some would designate as our race. And so in understanding that, we have to take that information and apply it in every area of our life. And if it's just going to the corner store, you have to understand we're at war economically, educationally. I mean, it's just so many vast areas. This area that we're talking about today is particularly interesting because of the history of law enforcement in our country. I mean, in the 1860s, during Reconstruction, law enforcement was created essentially to manage the freedmen, the freed slaves. Mm-hmm. There was no sheriff. Before the Reconstruction. After Reconstruction, you go from having, you know, essentially slave owners to now these sheriffs and these constables that are managing black people. Mm-hmm. They created laws, black codes, to manage and govern the lifestyle of black people. So when you have that legacy of racism that's inherent within your system, it's going to carry out. And we saw, like, the case in New York.
Right.
I mean, it continues. So we have to understand the situation in order to be best prepared and how to deal with it.
So as being black males in America, have y'all ever been pulled over and feared for your life?
Yeah. I can tell a quick story that's not quick at all. But I remember this was 2014 summertime, coming home from a pool party. I'm soaking wet. Accidentally got pushed in the pool. Phones got destroyed, you know. So one, I'm without communication. Two, I'd been drinking, right? But made it home fine, no issues. Well, made it to my neighborhood fine, no issues. And I'm sitting at the stop sign, and I see the police lights going on to my left, and it looks like they're at one of my neighbor's homes. And to the right, I'm like, I could just go to the right, no problem. I'm like, you know, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
Right.
I make the left-hand turn, and I see the cops walking out, and he asks me to stop. And I'm like, yeah, what's going on, officer? He was like, looks like you ran that stop sign back there. I was like, no, not at all. And he was like, well, it looks like you were speeding as well. I'm like, one, my car is electric, so you can't hear it. You can only see. And you're looking at me straight on, so you can't gauge speed. You know, I'm an engineer, so I understand the concept of speed and what you need in order to assume mm-hmm. something. And you don't have the variables to tell me that I'm going faster than 35 miles an hour. You just don't. There's nothing that you have to say that. So I entertained this conversation. And he's like, "Have you been drinking?" And I'm like, "Well, I just came from a party a few hours ago," and that's where I made my first mistake. But then he asked me about the car, right? So literally, he has me park my car, and I can see my street, and I'm less than an eighth of a mile away, meaning I'm a block and a half. I could walk home and leave my car, no problem. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he puts me through the test to test if I'm drunk or whatever the case is. So I'm literally going through all the things that he wants to go through, and at the end of it, he says, you failed. You didn't pass this. We're going to put you in handcuffs and take you down. And I'm like, officer, what do you mean I failed? And I'm having a fluid conversation with him. I'm like, I stay around the corner. What is this about? And so it was just a little back and forth. But, you know, that night changed my life. It changed my perspective because I ended up incarcerated for 22 hours. I ended up in general population. I ended up the whole spread your cheeks, butt naked, put these clothes on, handed me this toilet paper and toothbrush and toothpaste. And I'm in here while people are eating dinner and watching TV and some people are showering and I'm in a cell, all because of a perceived DUI that the officers end up not coming to the ALR hearing. They didn't have body cam footage. There was no recording from the vehicle. So throughout the whole process, I ended up, this case ends up being dismissed. Of course, right. I get community service time, and they give me a lesser charge, which then gets dismissed after I do community service or something because I didn't go to trial by jury. And this is my first time ever having to deal with this. And it put me in such a negative position around police that I think it changed me forever. Mm-hmm. And I felt at that moment, that's when I felt at war. Mm-hmm. At that moment, I felt like I couldn't be a perceived affluent African-American in a nice vehicle, albeit disheveled because I'm soaking wet, mm-hmm. Without the ability to make a call to somebody. And everything taken away from me at that moment. And then to spend thousands of dollars to hire an attorney, to have to go to these classes and really want to fight this case, but cost me more, but my blood alcohol test came back and I was legally intoxicated, but there's no footage and there's no there's supplemental reports that conflict. So there's so much going on. And I feel lessened as a man, especially as an African-American male. I feel defeated in this case. I feel less than a citizen. And it really tarnished my outlook on police as a whole. And from that moment on, until today, I still have a negative connotation when I see an officer. I still feel some type of way. And it's hard to deal with that rage that has built up because of that. Because now it puts me in a position of, if I do decide to have a license to carry, and I do fear for my life, I now know to what extent these officers are willing to go, let alone what I've seen on the media with mm-hmm. a Philando Castile and Freddie Gray and all these other babies and young men that have lost their lives because of the fear of this officer, mm-hmm. you know, or this officer fearing them, so to speak. But right. I say all that to say, my story has changed my perspective forever, and I can't say it's for the better.
Hmm. That's interesting. I would say it was a horrible experience, but I'm glad that your perception is what it is now.
Yeah.
Because I find that the so-called educated of us, we tend to act as if it's not a real thing.
Yeah.
Like there is no DWB, and I mean, I've had these conversations with the lawyers, with, you know, the professionals. And they're like, oh, you know. And I believe it's because they think that you know, they're kind of above that because they're smart or they had a scholarship or whatever, and they think that it can't happen to them. But it's important that we understand the situation. Again, if we really care, we'll look at the studies. The studies will tell you that we are stopped more, frisked more, searched more, convicted more, and sentenced more harshly than white people at a 2-to-1 clip. So it's not, this isn't something that we're making up. I mean, I know how I feel, but again, I can read the study.
Right.
As we talked about earlier, this is y'all study. Y'all gave us this. You know what I'm saying? These y'all numbers. And there are fewer of us than there are of you in this country. So this is not something that we're imagining. So we need to really understand that this is a real thing, and we need to be able to have strategies to deal with it. As I mentioned before, you know, make sure that you are, you know, honestly, I don't think that there's anything you can do when an officer's afraid. Like in the Philando Castile case, he was afraid, you know, for whatever reason. You know what I mean? I'm not making any excuses for him, but he was just afraid of this black man. This black man did nothing. This black man served meals to kids. I mean, he worked in the lunchroom of elementary school. He was no threat at all, and he was legally carrying. So he was afraid. So there's nothing we could do about his lack of courage as an officer. But there are things that we should do to diminish or lessen the risk. We just have to make them feel comfortable in that situation. We are subject to their mercy during a traffic stop. We just are. I mean, they can pull a gun and it's lawful. They can ask us for our identification and it's lawful. So we have to make sure we understand that situation and go through certain steps. If we do that, I think we'll be okay. Is it going to totally stop, you know, the issue? It's not, because at the core of it is racism. It's a racist system that perpetuates the stops, the searches, the arrests, the convictions, and the sentencing. It's all based on race. So there's nothing we can do about that unless we somehow change the system. Not work within it, but literally just destroy the one we have and start over. That's the only way it'll be fixed. But understanding that this is the system that we live under, we got to take certain steps and understand the situation that we're in.
So then let's take Gary's situation that happened to him in 2014 and kind of break it down. In that scenario that he gave us, did he, in your opinion as a criminal defense attorney, did he do anything wrong? Is there something you could change for the people that are listening?
Wrong?
Kind of, yeah. Like when we're pulled over
standpoint?
From a strategy pull standpoint, when he gets pulled over, what should you do?
DWI is funny.
And can you explain the DWI versus DUI?
Absolutely. DWI is driving while intoxicated.
Okay.
DUI is driving under the influence. In Texas, DWI is punishable by jail. DUI is only punishable by fine if you are under the age of 21. So it's essentially a ticket. The law says that if you have any detectable amount of alcohol on you, so if they smell alcohol coming from your breath and you're 19, you can get a ticket for DUI. Okay, that's under the transportation code. DWI is in the penal code. And that is if your blood alcohol concentration is above a 0.08 or you have lost the normal use of your physical or mental faculties. That's DWI. We don't see much DUI. That's kid stuff.
Right.
What we deal with, I have a DWI tomorrow, in fact. What we deal with is DWI. And Gary, in your situation, I don't know if there's anything that you could have done other than refuse to participate in the field sobriety test.
Mm-hmm.
You're not obligated to perform those tests. However, administratively, we impliedly consent when we get our driver's license to participate in those tests. So administratively, you can lose your license for, I think it's 180 days up to, I think even 2 years or something. But they can't make you perform those tests.
Yeah.
I probably, when he started asking about, you know, performance at the one-legged stand, the walk and turn, and the horizontal gaze and stagnus test, that's the one where they shine the light.
Mm-hmm.
I would have just, knowing what I know, now, feeling like you probably feel like, man, I'm right up the street. Let me do this test and
get on about my business. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as an attorney, I always advise my clients, you know, you should never perform a field sobriety test. Because at the end of the day, if they want to arrest you, they've already made up their mind that they're going to take you in. You know what I'm saying? It's really, there's no, and then the funny thing is, there's no pass to field sobriety test. There is no pass. All you can do is be scored on what they call clues. So there's 6 clues, and if they give you 3 out of 6, that means whatever it means. I'm still not sure as to what it means. 1 out of 6, I mean, you can have 1 out of 6, they still arrest you. You can have 6 out of 6, and it doesn't matter. So there's no way you can win when you conduct a field sobriety test. There is no win for that. That's why we advise don't perform field sobriety tests. Don't blow into a breathalyzer. Those are things that voluntarily you are not obligated to do. But again, administratively, we agree to do it when we get our driver's license. And that's kind of the trick that they play on us.
As far as being pulled over just for a speeding ticket,
yeah.
How do I leave the speeding ticket with my life? Because, you know, people, yeah. They get pulled over. There's this movie out right now, Queen of Slim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I won't give the spoilers, but there's an issue at the stop. Mm-hmm. And they then go on the run. And people get pulled over and they get mouthy. Mm-hmm. I was pulled over once and I had a lot of questions for him. Next thing I know, the cop is yelling on his microphone, his badge number. And I look over and there's four cops that showed up. Mm-hmm. Because I'm asking how fast was I going and where was the sign? And I took the position of shut up, mm-hmm. take your ticket, go on your way. But I know other people want to fight the fight. And
fight the good fight.
You're not going to fight it on the side of the road, though. You know what I mean? Like, you're not.
I have rights and I want
to. and they're going to give them to you? I mean, their job is to enforce.
Right.
Their job is not to sit and determine whether, you know, this is lawful. Mm-hmm. Their job is to arrest. So there's no reasoning with these people.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you just, I think you did the right thing when you had the thought process of, I want to go home. We'll deal with the ticket later.
Yeah.
We can go to court and have a trial in JP court.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you want to get home. You know, and we know as blacks, that is less likely to happen when it comes to us. Again, the numbers say that it's more likely to escalate into a violent situation when you're black. Those are the numbers.
Hmm.
Two times is often. So, if you have to take the $200 ticket, just take the ticket.
Okay.
And going back to what you mentioned about the DWI situation, I'm in this situation at that moment, you know, I'm learning the logistics, the thing about the fact that I could have refused. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's some called a no refusal weekend or something mm-hmm. like that. And what I didn't want to do, which was most important to me at the time, was I didn't want to lose my license. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know this, you know, I just willy-nilly, I wanted to get home. Right. But going back, I was like, I'm glad I didn't refuse because I didn't want to give up my license, not understanding that this ALR hearing would have caused me to lose my license. Mm-hmm. But then neither officer decided to show up for the ALR hearing, which is very uncommon. Mm-hmm. And I never lost my license. So I was truly blessed walking through this situation that I went past it very unscathed, logistically, financially. You know, I spent several thousand dollars throughout the whole course of it. But, you know, I walked away with somewhat of a slap on the wrist, sort of speak, even though emotionally things have changed drastically, mm-hmm. or psychologically, rather. But I did not want to lose my license. Is there any way around that situation where you can refuse but administratively keep your license?
So it's interesting. The numbers say that 1 in 80 people who are driving while intoxicated get pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's just getting pulled over. That's sure. not to say that they're going to arrest you. That is you were unlucky that day because 1 in 80 even get pulled over. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've driven up 290, you know what I'm saying? And I probably should have been pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
So you were unlucky. At the end of the day, if you get stopped for DWI, something bad is going to happen if you are intoxicated. You're probably going to lose your license. Like, my thing is, you're probably going to lose your license.
Mm.
Is there a way to finagle it? Not really. Because, again, upon my advice, you're not performing any field sobriety tests, at which point they're going to ask for a blood warrant.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that at that point. So they're going to get the specimen. Now, it can help you later because if it takes 2 hours or more, mm-hmm. that helps us later on in court because we can do some things with our argument.
Sure.
But when you just blow, hey, I'm a consent to what they're telling me because I don't want to lose my license. If you blow 10 minutes after they pull you over, you're convicting yourself if you're intoxicated because that specimen is going to show up and there's not a lot we can do about it at that point. So you're going to get the conviction. You're probably going to lose your license anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really, I mean, you came out unscathed in some ways.
Sure.
But there's really nothing you can do. There's no strategy.
Gotcha.
It's like you were unlucky, and you're probably going to lose your license. Let's just make sure you don't lose your life. Mm-hmm. And let's keep you out of jail. Let's keep you out of jail. And unfortunately, with DWI, it's harder to deal with the conviction because it's not subject to having your record sealed in Texas. So if you have a DWI conviction, you can't get your record sealed under the rules. And so it's a tough case to deal with.
The record's not sealed, but can you get it expunged at some point?
No, expunction is even better. So the only way is if you go to trial and you win.
Okay.
Or the case is dismissed, or you petition the governor of the state to give you a pardon. Those are the only three ways in which you can get an expunction on a DWI.
Y'all's governor is not giving out pardons these days.
That's the
law. I didn't say that. He's a great guy.
You voted for him.
I did not.
Well, it caused me to have an obstruction of a motor highway, but dismissed. Right. And my attorney said, well, just tell the people your car fell dead in the middle of the road if anyone ever asked.
You did. That was a good outcome for you. That was good. I have one coming up in Brazoria. And the guy, he had an accident and everything. It was really bad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was bad. And he's going to get one of those, either an obstruction or something like mm-hmm. that. More so because of his criminal history. So you did pretty well.
Yeah.
So back to traffic stops. Are all the cops now wearing body cams?
No. It's not mandated by law. Some of the law enforcement agencies, they have their own policies. But it's not something that they have to do. Again, some of the policies are like, you know, you have to keep it on, and then some of them they don't even speak to when you keep it on, or you can keep on the audio but not the video. So no, all of the law enforcement agencies in Texas, we have thousands of them.
Right.
Them. No, they're not obligated to wear.
What about the vehicles? Are those all equipped with cameras?
No, they're not.
So this, I forget which one it is. There's been so many shootings. The young man who was in his vehicle with his daughter. And he was grabbing for his cell phone, but they thought it was a gun. And the girlfriend was on Facebook Live.
That's Philando Castile. Yeah.
Okay.
That's in Minnesota.
Is that legal for us to do, to record?
In Texas, it is. You only need the consent of one of the participants.
So one party recording state.
That's
so,
it.
What's your advice on people getting pulled over? You see the gentleman walking out the car, and you're like, you know what? His walk is a little bit different today. Mm-hmm. Turn the camera on. Get ready to go.
I mean, it can't hurt. You know, to me, there's just too much going on. That's one of the scariest times of your life when you see those lights behind you. Should you turn on the camera? We've seen that it can be helpful. And we've seen, like, in the Philando Castile case where it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I would say that having the footage is better than not having the footage. If you're going to be turning on a camera in lieu of doing something else that makes you feel safe, then I would probably say do the other thing. You know, get your documents in order. Make sure that, you know, if you have a firearm, you disclose it. Make sure that you do sense the kind of the feel of the officer as they approach the vehicle to see if they're feeling particularly antsy or if they're demonstrating any anxiety or anything like that, and have the conversation. When you just turn on the camera, hey, I'm recording you. You may be escalating it. Now, again, it's not our responsibility to protect and serve them. It's their responsibility to protect and serve us.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is we got to protect and serve ourselves because they are not here to protect and serve us. That's not the role of law enforcement to be real about it. So, honestly, I would really be careful with that because I don't want to make the officer angry for no reason. You know, many times I just think just because of the way I look, it's going to be a problem. So many times, I'm respectful. Hey, here's my license. Here's this. And like I said, the last three times this year, I haven't had a problem. And I've had a firearm in the car every time. But I'm not going to be naive to suggest that, you know, nothing bad can happen. But for me, I didn't feel the need to turn on the camera.
Okay. And then just tips. So if it's at nighttime, have your lights on, you know.
Can't hurt.
So that they can see into the vehicle.
Yeah. Well, again, that's touchy because, you know, you may have something in the vehicle you don't want them to see. You have a lesser expectation of privacy in your car than you do your home.
Okay.
So if you have something in your car or if there was someone in your car that had something in your car and left it and you're now turning on lights and they look and just see something that they feel is PC or probable cause, that stop may turn into an arrest as a result. So I don't want to give like these blanket rules because every circumstance is a little different. I just say try to be polite, respectful, professional. Try to have a conversation with the officer. And just think about safety at the end of the day. Your safety first and their safety. If you approach it conceptually like that, I think you'll have a better chance of leaving, you know, the stop safe. But just to say, you know, stop, turn on the light, turn on the camera, call. I don't know if I would give that advice because, one, I don't believe necessarily it's a catch-all and it's going to make everybody feel good. But I just think that there are certain circumstances where that's not appropriate.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Okay. Disparities. Do you believe that there's a disparity between black men and black women getting pulled over?
Me?
Yes, either one of y'all. Well, men.
I mean, I think that there's a disparity between men and women in general, regardless of ethnicity, right? And so specifically, and now let me dive deeper.
Okay.
So that's at the
not in society. We're talking about traffic stops.
Yeah. So at and I would say that societal norms often, they find their ways in everything, right?
Okay.
So the societal norm is that a man could be more aggressive than a woman, even though that may not be statistically proven. But now dropping down to African-American male versus female, I think we've seen, you know, the Sandra Bland's, and people die at the hands of police officers. On the female side, we've seen the male side. I think that as an African-American male, I am more of a threat to this officer. Now taking the conversation back to what Quentin mentioned earlier from slave patrols and things like that, it was the men that were castrated and hung and put in these situations to make everyone else fearful, right? So the men have consistently been demonized in society, specifically in the criminal industrial complex that we have. So when we get pulled over, I think the women are given a bit more of a pass because of societal norms, because of what history has shown us. Whereas the men, I'm looking at your hair to see whether you've got locks, whether you've got a crew cut, whatever that looks like. I'm looking at your attire. I'm looking at the kind of car you drive. I think all these other things matter when it's an African-American male in that chair, in that driver's seat, versus a female.
Yeah. There is a disparity, but I don't want to limit what the black woman goes through as well in any way. And I don't think that's what you were doing.
No, there. Never.
Because you talk about lynching. I mean, we've heard the stories of the women being lynched and the baby cut out the belly and all of that. Then you talk about the Fort Worth case where, you know, the beautiful young lady was merely playing video games with her nephew and then she's murdered.
Right.
By a race soldier, to be quite honest with you. But there is a disparity because the biggest threat to white supremacy is the black male. And that's taught to us by, you know, various people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are reasons for that. So as a result, I think many times it's not just consciously, but it's also subconscious. I mean, when they pull up on a black male, it's within them. Mm-hmm. If they are racist, if they are soldiers of white supremacy, and not all officers are, because that's not what I'm saying. But if they are racist and they do speak to racist ideas and they have racist beliefs, they're going to be more threatened by the black male than the black female for a few reasons. One, just because of physicality, but also deep down, we are a greater threat to them than the white woman or than the black woman is. And so there is going to be a disparity. But I think about, you know, times when my wife got pulled over on 45. You know, during rush hour, and was talked to very harshly by an officer where he should have been thinking about her safety. So, you know, we all gonna get it, but certainly the black male being a greater threat is usually gonna get it more, and that's the one we'll hear about more often. You think about Amber Geiger murdering, you know, Botham Jean in his house. He's sitting down eating ice cream. We are going to be a threat, and what's interesting is that they are going to get the benefit of the doubt every time. We're gonna stop and look at the Amber Geiger situation because it was egregious, but we got to stop and look at it and just make sure that she wasn't in fear of her life. I mean, that's crazy. She was not in her house.
Right.
You know, she walked in and killed a man sitting down on the couch.
And ice cream doesn't kill.
It doesn't. It doesn't. And they tried so hard, he had nothing in his house. I mean, so because we're the threat, the greater threat, the disparity is going to be focused toward us.
Hmm. Well, guys,
black man is God.
Black man is God. All right. Such a great discussion. We always end our shows with the Lay to Rest, and it's something that you just want to get off your chest. Maybe it's about this topic, but you can do it here. This is where we allow you to lay it to rest.
Our profanity is profanity a lot in this conversation.
That's fine. Oh, that's fine. We're grown adults. We're fine.
Quentin, would you like to go first, sir?
You know, what's so frustrating, and I remember this from last time, so mm-hmm. thank you for this.
No problem.
I think about when I say educated of us, I mean those of us that have gone through the traditional American educational system, the Western educational system, because many of us haven't, and they're probably more educated than us. So the so-called educated of us, we're living in this idea that it's post-racial. Hmm. You know, and I got to lay that to rest. It's not post-racial. If you pick up a book or you read an article, it's right there. It's clear. And I think that's the first thing that we need to do is understand that. And I believe once we understand that, then people much smarter than me will come together and create solutions. But we're stuck mm-hmm. in this thing where, well, President Obama, he was president for 8 years. So that's one man.
That's true.
What about the collective other millions of blacks that don't have, you know, the things that they need to live right. and the ones that fear for their lives? So I want to lay that to rest. We're not in a post-racial America.
Mr. Gary.
Wow. You know, this is a very interesting finale, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Something to lay to rest. And I wish that we could be us. But, you know, taking a page from Quentin's playbook, I think we have to lay to rest the idea that equality is real. And if we don't, then we're destined to make mistakes, egregious mistakes, that could cost us not only our lives, but the livelihoods of those around us. It could cost us the opportunity of legacy, the things that we want to build, that we want to give to our family and friends and communities. And the moment we let go of that is the moment we'll strive harder for it. Mm-hmm. Because it takes away the idea of being content, and it puts you back into that hustle and grind mode and ideology of wanting more and putting the grit back into life, especially to fight to have the things that you feel are your just due. And I'd like to lay that to rest because I think that I was once that person that was good. Pulled over a couple of times in 10 years, good. And every time I kind of, you know, slid on the blood of Jesus and got out of a situation or whatever the case is. But the last time changed me, and it changed me forever. And I don't get pulled over awful, thankfully, and I pray that this doesn't start a trend.
Right.
But I have to remember that I am not equal in the eyes of the law, let alone the rest of society.
Mine is, when it comes to these traffic stops, that we need to stop trying to fight and win our case on the side of the road. You have attorneys for a purpose. There are wonderful criminal defense attorneys, one sitting next to me. Take the ticket, give your license, hand off your insurance, and shut your mouth so you can get home and let someone fight for you and not make the news because you're dead on the side of the road. So let's just stop trying to win the fight on the side of the road. Thank you guys so, so, so much for being a guest awesome. Today.
Been great.
Quentin, where can they follow you?
At QB Law on Twitter and Instagram, and also my website, www.qb-law.com.
Perfect. You're still taking clients, right?
Always taking
okay,
clients.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Gary?
Of course, anywhere online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat, at G Hawkins, that's G Hawkins with a Z. And of course, you'll see me over at Boom Bap and Startup Masters starting back in January.
You can follow me at Simply Being T on Instagram, and then I have a laundry list because all my people are not here today. You can follow No Further Questions at NFQ Pod on Twitter. No Further Q on Instagram and on Facebook. No Further Questions. I miss my co-host so much. Shout out to Brandy and shout out to Sam. I hope I did a wonderful job. Until next time. Bye, guys.